Hi, my name is Frankie. Thank you for listening to Two My Mom. I never listen.
On today's episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli, we are excited to welcome ESPN reporter Holly Rowe. Holly and Debbie get into a bunch of topics, including her love the one you're with mindset when asked about her favorite sport to cover, but college football was definitely her favorite sport growing up because of the memory she has of going to games with her dad. Holly also gives her thoughts on the transfer portal, missing being in the arenas to cover games due to COVID-19, her experience of a lifetime, as she puts it, being in the WNBA bubble this past summer, her radio show on Sirius XM, staying organized and up to date by being a fan of all the sports she covers, her philanthropic side, and the advice that she would give to young girls wanting to be the next Holly Rowe. All of this and much more on a truly wonderful episode of Nothing But Net with Debbie Antonelli. Please enjoy.
Holly, I cannot thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule. Thank you for joining us on Nothing But Net.
Thank you for having me.
I don't really know where to start with you because you're such an interesting person. You have creative, you have philanthropic, you have social, you have the intellectual side of everything that you bring to all of your work. I guess I would start with, what's your favorite sport to cover?
Everyone always asks me that question, and I never have a good answer for it, except for, have you heard the old song, Love the One You're With? That's how I feel about my work. While I'm immersed in certain sports, I feel like it's the most important thing in the world, and I'm so in love, and then I move on to my next sport, and I feel exactly the same way. So I'm really lucky that I love everything. But I think going back, the first sport I fell in love with as a kid, you know, like my first true love was college football. So I can remember being 5, 6 years old and going to games with my dad. And that sport was kind of what my dad and I had together, and he since passed away. So I think college football is probably my first true love.
Love the One You're With is a song I used to sing to my sister as she went through boyfriends after boyfriends.
Is this the sister we've had fun with in London at the Olympics that I know?
Yes, it is. My sister Denise. Exactly, there Holly. You know what? She asks me about you all the time. She always wants to know, have I talked to you? How are you? What are you doing? And I'm like, turn on the TV. You'll see her. It's a busy lady.
We had a great time. We had one of the best times I've ever had because, you know, we work so much. And I think you're even worse than I am probably of working all the time. And so when we went, a group of us went to the London Olympics, me, you, Doris Burke, Beth Mowins, and we just got to be fans. And we, you know, painted our faces, put stickers on our faces. We wore our USA gear everywhere. And it was just such a great lesson to me of, we all got into this business because we love it. And sometimes you got to go back and be a fan. And I did that again recently, Deb. I went to the Super Bowl as a fan. When Tampa Bay won, I just moved to Tampa Bay about 18 months ago, just in time for all these championships. So I was here before they started winning. So I feel like I'm not a bandwagoner, but I've had a fun time. And I just went as a fan and cheered and yelled and screamed in the stands. And it was so cool.
Oh my gosh, Holly, I'm so glad you brought up the 2012 Olympics because I have a great picture in my office of the four of us that I look at. I see it every day. And it is a picture of you and me and Beth Mowins and Doris Burke. And it was an incredible experience that we had. I mean, you were such, I knew you had all these skills and I knew how resourceful you were. I had no idea that you could navigate other countries the way you can navigate.
I think that we came out of that trip. So Beth Mowins and I would compete a little bit, like who could get the underground better and have better. I think one day we took one train, you guys took another, and we competed who got there first. But yeah. I think Beth Mowins and I have talked about this before. Like we would be really good on the fantastic race, or, you know, some of those where you have to get dropped off in the middle of nowhere and figure your way out.
There's another show that I just saw that I think I would take the four of us on, and that is Tough as Nails. You know, how tough can you be? Like, I think between the four of us that I think that might be bendable, but not breakable.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Doris Burke and I have talked about this before of, as we, you know, we're sitting around talking about why we think we've had good careers or why we've had longevity in our careers. And we both say, because we're tough and we have an exceptional work ethic, you know, like exceptional work ethic. This is not an easy job, you know, more than anybody. You know, you get to be on TV and it seems glamorous, but there's a lot that goes in behind the scenes, and you have to really love it to keep that work ethic going.
One of the things that I think about with you, Holly, is fight. I think you're an incredible fighter. I think you are passionate about a lot of things. I think you have incredible compassion for other issues. But I also think that because your fight, your resolve, your toughness, has that part of the reason why you've been able to fight through some of the adversity that you've had to face while you're still maintaining this high profile career?
I think so. I mean, you know, I just was taught as a kid, you don't quit, you never give up. And I just hate quitting. I can remember, this is a funny story I've never told anyone in my lifetime. I remember I was running the 800 meters as a track athlete in high school, which if you've ever looked at me, clearly I'm not an 800 meter track athlete, you know? And I remember coming around the bend and feeling my hamstring pull, like twinge. I didn't pull it. It just kind of twinged. I went to the grass on the infield like I'd been shot, and I didn't finish the race. And I just remember feeling so much shame because I took the easy route out and I knew it. You know, I could have easily finished, but I was exhausted. And so I think I remembered very early on in my life that quitting brings me great shame. So I try not to do it.
You know, that's an interesting concept because today athletes have lots of options. They have an incredible voice, but quitting is something that I hear a lot of coaches talk about when they're referencing that tough love. You know, it's too easy to just put your name in the transfer portal, or, you know, if you're really in a bad situation, you can get yourself out of it. But how much does that tough love, do you think, factor in with athletes today? And where do you see the balance? Because you're around all football, high level basketball, you see it all.
Yeah, it's funny. I had an experience this week. I put a tweet out on Friday. So I saw this, I'm not going to say who it was, but I saw a kid enter the transfer portal that, you know, we never know what's going on behind the scenes. So first, I do want to be compassionate because I know that things aren't always what they seem. However, there are thousands of kids in the transfer portal that will never get another scholarship because so many people went into the portal and only a very small percentage are getting out with a scholarship. And so you're leaving a sure scholarship of a way to pay for your college and putting your hat in a ring that doesn't exist. And it makes me crazy. And I think a lot of it is because kids are getting poor advice from either their families or people close to them or around them. I mean, I've seen kids get poor advice from adults and it makes me crazy. So I put out a tweet that was like, you know, real life doesn't have a transfer portal. And I got so much blowback. I hurried and deleted the tweet. And I was like, oh my God, what I'm trying to say is it's not, the grass is not always greener. Like you think the transfer portal is going to solve your problems. And in a very small percentage of the cases, maybe 10% of kids, it is rectifying a problem or getting away from a bad situation. The other 90% are leaving that portal with no college scholarship. And at the end of the day, I thought this was about getting your college paid for free, you know, like I just think of how many kids have thrown away their free education. And as somebody who had to pay my own way through college and I was as poor, I donated plasma. I worked four jobs. Like I was so poor paying my way through college. So I don't think I understand their mindset. I really don't. I think I'm intolerant of quitting.
I'm 100% with you. I know as a child growing up, my parents didn't let us quit. I mean, I was taking tap dancing lessons and I hated it. And my mother told the teacher to tell me that Joe Namath took tap dancing lessons. And that's the only reason why I was willing to stay in it. Because if Joe Namath took tap dancing lessons, well, I want to be a quarterback in the NFL. I think I can hang in there. So I get it. The pay your way through is really interesting because I did get a full scholarship to play basketball in college, books, everything included. And I was so appreciative. And I don't think I recognized how valuable that was until I married my husband and inherited 17 years of Ivy League debt from Columbia. And I paid three college tuitions. Three.
Yes.
So it's expensive to put your kids through college. Now, all along, like you did, I'm sure you save money for your kids so they don't have that kind of debt when they get out. But the educational piece of it that you brought up about the transfer portal, about getting your education paid for, we don't even hear that in the messaging anymore with college athletics.
Just imagine what's happening with kids' transcripts and what's happening with their pursuit of a major. And when they're trying, you know, there's kids who've gone to three different schools and, you know, some of it works out. Like one kid that I've talked to that I think it was beneficial for, and you know, I know people on the outside have been critical of her, but Destiny Slocum, who's playing for Arkansas, she's played for three schools. And we've had some really good conversations about, you know, she's working on a master's. She took care of her academic business everywhere she went. And so it has actually helped her to now have, you know, a bachelor's degree from Oregon State. And now she's working on her master's from Arkansas. So there's some exceptions to that rule. And she has found herself as a human in a way that she couldn't at some of the stops she was on. So that part I'm very compassionate and empathetic about. But the kids who are quitting because somebody's in front of them or they're not getting enough playing time, and their parents who support that, because the parents these days, like you and I are just above the generation, you know, I can be a helicopter mom. Trust me, I have to fight that urge within myself.
Yes.
I had an experience one time in my life where I called a teacher and kind of railed on them because my son said, this teacher, blah, blah, blah. And when that teacher let me know that what my son had said was not accurate, that's the last time I ever took my son's side is parents step in and we believe our kids or we facilitate and enable our kids. And that's not always the right path.
Oh my gosh. I could spend the next week talking to you about stories about having to deal with my three boys, some situations with them and the whole IEP process with my middle son, Frankie, which if anybody's listening and knows what the IEP is, I'm not even going to go into it, but it has been some tough situations to have to advocate and fight for, and knowing that your kid isn't always right, but trying to do the right thing is sometimes challenging, especially when nobody's watching. So the one thing I want to know from you, Holly, is because you have such a public life, and everyone knows you, and you're so adored everywhere you go. I mean, I'm looking at games on ESPN, and I see there's your cutout in some arena that somebody put your face in, and it's just amazing. Like, do you feel like the Pied Piper everywhere you go in college?
I don't know that, but I do think I have friends everywhere I go. I think, you know, I've now been at ESPN. This is my 25th season at ESPN, and you go to these college campuses. And so, you know, when I started working games, none of these kids were born. So I feel like in a lot of ways, people have grown up with you and administrators. You know, I've known people on campuses, and I just feel like I have this huge family, I guess is what I would say, is like, oh, I'm going to go to Oregon. I'm going to call my friends there. I'm going to go to Texas. I'll call people there. You know, I feel like I have this community and a sports community that is very real and very strong. And in many ways, my family. So I really love that.
How have you been able to navigate all these years with your health and with some of the challenges that you've had to face? It seems like you get uplifted by so many different people wherever you go.
Yeah, I think that I've had a really rough 5 years, I would say. I was thinking about this yesterday. I'm just getting over COVID and it's been tough. And I've had a couple things that I've been like, come on, like I just beat cancer. And I never want to say I beat cancer because it always scares me that it will come back. But I've been through cancer. I just had a clean scan and then I got COVID. And I'm just like, I'm good at overcoming adversity. So please stop making me show that. I just have had enough. So listen, I've had a much easier path than a lot of people in life, but I'm exhausted right now. I don't know about you, but I am dying a slow death of not being able to be at games and around people. And I'm dying a slow death of overcoming adversity in my house by myself. And I've had enough.
The smell of the gym, the squeak, the snap of the neck, the interaction with the people. I mean, I hate to say how long I've been going to campuses, but 33 years for me calling college basketball. It's a long time. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of fun. When you think about I mean, a lot of people would ask you where your favorite city or what your favorite arena is. I don't even know if that's fair. I mean, when people ask me what my favorite arena is, I always say I loved going over to Carmichael at North Carolina, even though I'm an NC State grad.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, I think for college football, my favorite place to do games is Penn State. I just can remember doing those whiteout games there. And one game in particular that I can remember is Ohio State at Penn State. And Ohio State was ranked, I think, number two or number three in the country. And Penn State was kind of struggling to get back to national relevance at that time. They had a quarterback, Michael Robinson, who turned out to be really good. And they went to the Rose Bowl with him. But they had this whiteout. And it was, I don't know if it was the first one or maybe the second whiteout. And it's 110,000 people at night with this huge matchup, and Penn State won. And I'll just never forget that feeling in the air that, you know, they let all their alumni come down and stand on the sidelines. And there are these grown men in Penn State Letterman jackets. And a couple of guys were crying, like, we're back. Penn State's back, baby. And I'll never forget that moment. And then I would say for college basketball, my favorite place in the world is Lawrence, Kansas. The Allen Fieldhouse is my absolute favorite basketball venue. Nothing like it. Like, I used to try to be politically correct and entertain people with other comment, you know, like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's really great. This place is really great. And then I just decided I was going to quit lying to everyone and just be honest. Allen Fieldhouse is the best.
Right. I mean, might as well. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. I might as well say it at this point. Golly. I mean, it's just what we live. It's what we've experienced. It's where we've been. It's mostly the people at those places that we enjoy so much. Since we're talking about venues, just give us one or two takes from the bubble, the wobble, the NBA wobble. Because if ESPN doesn't put you up for an Emmy, let me know how I can do it.
Oh, stop. You know, it was the most incredible experience of my lifetime. And I've had a pretty fabulous life with lots of many incredible experiences. And that was the number one for a couple of reasons. One, we were sequestered there and it was hard. You know, I was in the same hotel room for 87 days and no, you know, like I had some social interaction, but I was there by myself. And so I finally just broke down and started doing stuff with some of the teams. And, you know, like I was trying to maintain objectivity and not be like that, but I was dying by myself and having no interaction. So finally I just said, forget it. I've got to have some human connection. But the second thing was, I realize now that we're doing games from home, how lucky I was to watch that season in person. It was good basketball. Oh my gosh. Breanna Stewart coming off her Achilles, Asia Wilson with this epic season, Angel McCautry coming back from injury and just having a great year, getting to the finals. There were Candace Parker with her best performance in many years. There were so many great performances in a unique and difficult way. And I got to be there courtside and I'm so grateful. I was just going to say one more thing is the third piece of that was the social justice piece of, I learned so much. I would get to be on these Zoom calls with the Players Association sometimes. And they had a call where it was all the mothers of women who had been killed by the police. And the mothers are weeping and crying and telling their stories. And like, I just came out of there learning that I have got to stand up for Black people in America in a way that I never, you know, like I didn't ever think I was racist. But what I learned is I haven't been anti-racist enough. I haven't been yelling from the mountaintops of how I demand that we treat people. And so I came out of there a much stronger ally and advocate. And that's changed my life. Like, I'm just not going to even worry about consequences or anything. I just want to support these women with all of my heart.
100%. Amen. End of sentence, period. Drop the mic. I couldn't agree with you more. And covering those games from home in my own little home bubble, because I did over 30 games for NBA TV and CBS, and it was phenomenal. I've covered the league from its inception. It was by far the best product I think we've ever had. And I can't wait to see if there's some derivative of that moving forward that maybe Commissioner Engelbert will consider with the players, because I definitely feel like if we had fans in that environment and we had that similar environment, boy, the basketball was just so, so good. Some of the best we've ever seen. So I want to ask you about your show, your radio show, your Sirius XM radio show, Holly. I mean, you just keep branching out into new and cool platforms and venues to share your message.
Yeah, it's been super fun because radio is different. You know, I did radio early in my career. I worked at a radio station, just like running the board and doing, you know, the commercial breaks and stuff like that. I had a great experience working at a KSL radio station in Salt Lake City, Utah, and my boss would let me, like, I was basically an intern. I think I made $5 an hour, and he would let me go do stuff. So I would go, I interviewed Shaq at the All-Star game. I interviewed, you know, Karl Malone, Michael Jordan, all these really great famous players as an intern making $5 an hour. So I have worked in radio, but that was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So this show has been on the air now for 2 years, and I don't think I'm great at it yet, but I feel I'm learning my way, and we have fun. And so I always feel like we did a good show when we look up and we're like, oh, the 2 hours are over, because we were having such a good time. And I think if we're having a good time, the audience probably is having a good time, or at least I hope they are. So I've enjoyed it. And then the other benefit has been we get to have guests on. And so, you know, coaches or players that I might not actually be covering their game, we still get to have them on our show and talk to them. You know, we had Charlie Collier on last week or 2 weeks ago, who is one of the best players in America who plays for Texas that not a lot of people are talking about. And, you know, we get to do 15, 20 in-depth minutes with her. I'm begging for Natasha Mack right now, another great player from Oklahoma State. We've had Ashley Jones from Iowa State. And so it's really fun to get to be able to know people and talk to people in a different format.
I think it's an incredible asset that you have that, and your broad-based knowledge of so many different things that makes it so interesting, for a radio show. So I've listened before and I enjoy it. So count me as a fan. I mean, I'm in there, Holly, listening, paying attention when I can.
Thank you.
With all the sports that you cover and to the extent and the profile that you cover them with, how do you keep it organized? Are you compartmentalized on certain things, or because you always seem to be writing stuff down all the time?
Well, if you could see my kitchen table right now, I don't feel like I'm organized because I have like a volleyball pile. I have my gymnastics pile. I have my college basketball men's pile, women's pile, football pile. So I think the way I keep it organized in my brain is I'm just a fan. For all these sports that I cover, at the end of the day, I'm a fan. So like I was sitting on the couch watching either Saturday night or Sunday night, and I could flip between, you know, women's softball, women's volleyball, women's basketball, and men's basketball. And I was just flipping around and I just kept thinking, and the Australian Open, watching Serena. And I just kept thinking, what a time we're living in that I have so many viewing options for women's sports. And, you know, people sometimes complain about it and, oh, ESPN's got it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Can we do better? Yes. But oh my gosh, we're doing a great job. I have so many options. I mean, Big Ten volleyball right now is the best thing going. I watched a Penn State Minnesota volleyball match this weekend that was just the best volleyball I've seen in a year. So I just feel grateful to be able to watch stuff. But I think I'm just a fan. That's how I keep it organized is I know and remember players because I become fans. Like, oh my gosh, I love how she moves on her drop step at the net. Or, you know, there's a player at Baylor right now, Yasiana Presley, that I'm obsessed with, that she flies through the air and hangs there like Michael Jordan, you know, before she kills the volleyball. So I think I remember stuff because I'm in love with it and I'm a fan and I can't wait to watch it again.
That's been one of the benefits for me for being home and not traveling is that I do get a chance to watch more stuff. Like I've always felt like I was prepared. I watch a lot of film and I'm paying attention of my part of it. But the whole big scope of what we're doing by being able to be at home and being able to do what you just said, flip around all night on all these different sports. That's been one thing that I've taken away as a benefit for being home.
Absolutely. I've been dying to ask you if you're crazy going being at home because you probably go and travel as much or more than I do. And you do stuff where you just want to go see this team. So you'll drive over and go see them. Are you going crazy right now? I've been dying to ask you.
I am starting to get my feet are shuffling like around the house. Like I've created this little whole workout in my house where I can run around, you know, while I'm doing different things to try to keep myself from just plopping down and watching, because we are used to just go, 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 right? And yes, I've always said, I thought sometimes, and I bet you feel the same way, that our travel schedule has been greater or larger than some head coaches we know.
Right.
We know we're on the road. We don't have home games. Like, we don't get a home game, right? There's no home game, but now we have a lot of home games. I want to ask you about this, Holly, because I think a lot of people ask me this question. I want to know from you how you feel about, there are a lot of options. Like you said, there's more viewing opportunity than there's ever been. There's more jobs, more opportunities than when we got started, there was very few. And I know when I started there, the only women's basketball on TV was the national championship game. So that goes way back. The times have changed. What advice do you give to all those young women out there that hit you up and go, I want to do what you're doing. I want to be the next Holly Rowe. How do I do that?
So I'll tell you a great story. And I don't know if I've ever told you this story before. If I have, you can stop me. But when I got out of college, it was really difficult because nobody wanted to hire you without 2 or 3 years of experience. And, you know, in my brain, I'm like, well, I've been in college. How could I get 2 or 3 years of experience? And so what I learned from that and what I would tell people moving forward is you have to be doing the job you want while you're in college. And people don't want to hear that. You want to just take your classes and have fun. But I think it's crucial, especially with the way digital media works now and the internet. You know, like, we're old enough that we didn't have the internet. If I had social media and the internet when I was in college, I would like own a network right now. Because you can get content out there, you know, like I would have to go and write a story and hope that my school newspaper would pick it up as a stringer. I would have to try to find a way to create my own opportunities. And my favorite story about that is the University of Utah's women's basketball games were not on the air anywhere, like not on radio, not on anything. And so I went to a local radio station and bought time. I did what's called a time buy on a local radio station for 2 hours. And then I went out and sold commercials, and I put myself with the University of Utah guys, the first women's basketball game on the radio. And it was Cheryl Swoops coming to the Huntsman Center with Texas Tech to play at the Huntsman Center and play Utah basketball. Like, think how amazing that is, that the year Cheryl Swoops had that epic year and they win the national championship, I had her game on the radio in Salt Lake City, Utah, because I did the extra work and effort to go get a time buy. And so I learned how to do that system. And for many years, I mean, I spent, you know, thousands of dollars of my own money that at that time I didn't have. I was young and poor, to get games on the air. So then I ended up doing BYU Utah games. Then I ended up going and doing BYU women's games. I did BYU women's volleyball, you know, and just getting women's games on the air. And some of it was selfish because it would provide opportunities for me to get reps. But now that I look back on it too, I'm like, man, that's amazing that those games weren't on the air. And since I started putting them on the air, they've been on the air ever since. It's never stopped. That, so I'm really amazing. Proud of that.
Should be, because during that time I was doing a similar thing at Ohio State, but I was the director of marketing. So I was able to use the power of Ohio State athletics to create a network and do a similar thing. We have a lot in common when it comes to that, because during that time, you're talking about like 93. That's the same time I was doing what I was doing at Ohio State. And mine coincided with Katie Smith being a freshman at Ohio State at that time.
Oh, that's and amazing. So
it was incredible to have that. Plus, taking Archie Griffin around with me everywhere I went on a sales call wasn't so bad either, because would say no to Archie in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, I can't imagine.
So I knew we had some similar things in common, just mainly our passion for the games that we get to call and how much we love the people that we get to be around, the coaches and the players and the fans. You're so philanthropic, Holly. You have a lot of things and causes that you care about. Can you just tell us about a couple of things that maybe you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Well, I don't think I do enough, first and foremost. I don't want to pat myself on the back because I feel like I can always be doing more with this and be doing better with this. But when I was going through cancer, you know, I'm in my brain, I'm young. I don't know how young, 52, 51, you know, when I was going through cancer, I just turned 50, 49. So I just remember praying and saying, listen, I don't think I'm done with life yet. I think I have more to give. And maybe I haven't been doing a good enough job giving back to others, but I promise you I will, because I have a big heart and I feel like I can do a good job with that. So I kind of made a promise to God that I would do a better job if he'd spare my life. And, you know, that sounds weird or dumb or whatever, but that's what happened. And so I try to do something, you know, I can't do everything. You know, a lot of people ask me for things, but I try to do at least something every week or every month that is giving back to others or speaking to a group or doing a charity event for free or speaking to somebody for free. But then I'm also just joined this, they're just starting this Women in Sports Council for the American Cancer Society. And so I'm passionate about that. And I've also been very passionate about the AIM at Melanoma and Melanoma Research Foundations. I do a lot for them because when I got diagnosed with melanoma, I didn't know anything about it. And I think the more people I talk to, nobody knows anything about it. And so what I didn't know is my lifelong worship of the sun and being in the sun and actually working outdoors most of my life, you know, with softball or football, I nearly killed myself. It's a 90% preventable disease. And so I really started being more of an advocate of, we have to cover our skin. As people go to these sporting events, you know, I'm talking to parents a lot of, they go sit outside at their kids' sporting events in the sun and I see them getting a tan or sunning themselves. And I just don't think people are aware of that the sun is killing us right now. So those are just a few things I'm trying to be passionate about, but there's a lot I love. And I wish I was more organized with it, you know, had more of a streamline, but I tend to just, when people ask, I try to say yes.
Don't you wish that you had an assistant, like somebody that was with you?
If I can hire, I have hired an assistant before and it became too difficult because like it's easier for me to just do stuff than explain to someone else how to do stuff. But I literally the other day was like, I need an intern. I just need someone to come and organize all of my football game boards that I've collected for the last 30 years covering football. And what do I do with those? And how do I scan those? And, you know, like there's a lot that comes in with our job from a paper pushing standpoint that I'm like, I just need help.
I'm with you. And then there's my BMAC. He helps me with a lot of things and projects that I have. And Brian McKay is my producer and he organizes me on some of the social media stuff that I like to do. So I've been very fortunate to find a BMAC. You got to have a BMAC in your life, Holly.
I love it. Well, he seems amazing. And if he's keeping you straight, that is some accomplishment, Debbie.
Oh gosh, Holly, I'll leave you with this. If you wouldn't mind, people ask you all the time for advice and you're so wise and full of experience. And like I said, you know, when we started talking, it was about all the different ways that I feel like are easy ways to describe you, but so in depth about your creativity and the intellectual and the philanthropic and the way you care. What would be like your parting shot here? Like, what is some advice for somebody who's listening that you would have gotten some good advice lately and you want to share?
Okay. Well, sometimes I feel like a fraud to share advice with other people because I'm not perfect. And I think I have a lot to keep learning and keep improving on. But here are a couple of things I've learned through my life. I think I've spent most of my life trying to fit in or to be, you know, the girl that wore the right pants. Like I never had the cute angel flight pants in junior high school, you know, like I never was the one that had the cute outfit in junior high. And I think I carried that not being the cool one for a long time in my life. And what I've learned as I've gotten older is fitting in is boring. I just think that being your authentic self, I mean, I'm the biggest nerd. I'm a dork. I'm completely ridiculous. And I've just decided to accept that about myself of, oh, Holly Rowe, you're so bizarre. Like, why are you doing that? And I don't care. Like, if I think it's funny or fun or it brings me joy or it makes me laugh or someone else laugh, I think that's important because while I was going through cancer, you know, I had some really dark days and there was a couple of a period of about a year where it looked like I was probably going to die and I wasn't going to make it. And, you know, my doctors would constantly be telling me, you know, you need to think about how you're using your time. And that was their nice, polite way of saying, we're not sure how much time you have left. And so I have started every single day. I do what's called a joy journal of what today, I think we're all so busy with lists of things to do and I've got to do this and worries and all this stuff. We are not living in joy every single day. like mine might be as simple of, I went to the Super Bowl and this woman was walking on a dirt road for a mile in front of me at the parking at the Super Bowl in like Balenciaga 6-inch heels. And she could only take a 2-inch step at a time. And I walked behind her and laughed and just enjoyed watching that woman walk. And, you know, just something as silly as that, but what brought me joy or what was hilarious, watching a children's choir sing the national anthem brought me to tears. So I wrote that in my joy journal. You know, just little silly things, because I don't think we're enjoying life every day. So I try to just close my eyes. And when something's fun or beautiful or memorable, I just soak it in and close my eyes and say a little prayer and say, thank you for this joyful moment, and just laugh my guts out and live in joy in some way every single day.
Holly, you're amazing. I know growing up, people thought that anyone who was on TV was rich and famous. And I can say for me, that's not true. But for you, I know you're famous, and you have imparted so much wisdom on so many different people, and you just sprinkle your dust everywhere you go, and it's all, it is joy. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to do this with us today. If you can't listen to this and not feel a big smile come on your face, then you're not living your true joyful self.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate all the work you do for women's sports. Nobody's more dedicated than you, and I appreciate you. And thanks for having me. It was very fun.
Thank you, Holly. Have a great day.
I will.
As always, you can send in your questions to Debbie at the email address askantonelli@gmail.com or by using the hashtag askantonelli on Twitter. You can listen to our podcast on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and TuneIn. You can find all of those by visiting our Linktree link in our bio on Twitter and Instagram at MBNWithDA or in the description of this podcast episode below.